KQED.
Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The fires in Sonoma, Lake, and Mendocino counties have hit the marijuana industry hard. Farmers along the North Coast were preparing for recreational marijuana's California debut this January, and instead, an estimated one-third of their crops have burned at the peak of harvest season. Federal restrictions on marijuana limit growers' access to credit and insurance. So many farmers saw their cash savings go up in smoke. And we're going to discuss the damage and plans to bounce back. Joining us in studio is David Downs, cannabis editor with the San Francisco Chronicle, and also the man who runs the Chronicle's website, greenstate.com. David Downs, good to have you.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. Good morning to you. Let me also say good morning to Tawny Logan, who joins us by phone this morning, chair of the board of the Sonoma County Growers Alliance. Tawny Logan, welcome to the Forum program.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for being here. And let me begin with David Downs here in studio. And let's just talk about numbers first. We've got a $20 billion pot economy that covers Napa, Sonoma, and Mendocino, estimated over $1 billion in crop losses.
Yeah, easily in the hundreds of millions to over $1 billion.
And what we also need to talk about is acreage here. I mean, there's Sonoma, about estimated 3,000 to 9,000 gardens, but most of the damage has been up in Mendocino, which is a pot-based economy.
That's right, and people up there say the Redwood Valley, which was completely smoked out and covered in fire, was, quote, primo growing area up in Mendocino County, so it's hitting them very hard.
Newsweek actually said first the California fires came for our wine and then it came for our pot. I don't know if it went in that order, but it certainly has done destruction devastatingly to both. And at this point, do we really know how many properties have been lost or farms destroyed? There were estimates of initially about 31 marijuana farms, right?
Yeah, I expect that number to rise considerably. A number of farms had joined associations like the California Growers Association or the California Cannabis Industry Association. And so those associations are tracking damage to farms. But there's an innumerable amount more that are in a gray market or a black market that haven't been showing up in tallies, and they've been hit really hard.
Yeah, you've got all this indoor growing and hybrid greenhouses. I mean, that's really not in the figures that we have, converted garages, so forth, yeah?
Exactly. There's a spectrum of grows out there, from personal gardens where people were selling their personal surplus into the medical system, all the way through 99 plant gardens and then big mega grows. And then you got to consider that a lot of the cannabis was being brought down out of the hills into places like Santa Rosa, where it was being dried, stored, processed, and manufactured, and a lot of those facilities went up in flames as well.
And Tawny Logan, let me go to you in this, because there's similar devastation to what happened in the wine industry, but no insurance. And as we kind of indicated earlier, a lot of the cash has stayed at home in the homes that burned down, because this is an industry that is entirely based on cash. And there's really no recovery loss here for so many of these.
That's right, with no insurance for these operators and also no access to bank loans. Operators, the majority of them have been leveraging their own life savings, building up from multiple cycles over the last 2 years, preparing for state licensing and local permitting. The bills that they have been seeing over this last year in preparation for meeting local permitting requirements have been astronomical. You know, most operators were just making it to this finish line of harvest. And so most of the reports that we're having here in Sonoma County, and that I'm sure is happening also in Mendocino and the other communities, is that was everything I had. And so they don't only lose their home, they lose their livelihood and all of their, you know, savings in one sweep.
And what does it mean that, I mean, most of marijuana growing in California has been, I would say, well, it's sanctioned officially now. It's going to begin as a legal business in January. But there's still a sense of fear of disclosure, and particularly of federal scrutiny.
Absolutely. That exists. And, you know, it is different, even with associations that are reaching out to our membership and to those who are not part of the membership but, you know, still need the support. There is, one, this is an industry that has a lot of pride, and so it's hard for them to ask for help because most of this industry has been incredibly self-sufficient for decades. But two, when they have been disqualified from participating on local levels with permits or a state license, it's even harder to come out and say, I've lost everything because my garage burned down with my house. A lot of those operators were also looking to leverage that last harvest and work towards buying a piece of property and getting into a zone where they could obtain that permit and move forward.
Again, Tani Logan's with us by phone. She chairs the board of the Sonoma County Growers Alliance, and David Downs is here with us in studio, Chronicle cannabis editor. David, can you say something about the crop damage? I mean, there's a lot of smoke damage and soot and, you know, concern about ash and all those things.
Right? Yeah, I just wanted to build first on what Tani said about lack of access to recovery. So we talked to FEMA, and these growers will not be eligible for any type of FEMA relief grants. And then we talked to the Small Business Alliance of the federal government, which does small business loans to most small businesses for property loss or revenue loss. And they said it's not sure. We're going to take it on a case-by-case basis. The industry
so even
not,
in that, they're in limbo, really.
Exactly. Yeah. And so people who don't have insurance are often underinsured, or we're finding that their insurers won't pay. They'll have exclusions for things like anything that's related to contraband, which begs the question, how are you insuring a cannabis crop if you have a contraband exclusion? And then they're facing a number of headwinds to getting back to their farms, where they're not being allowed to their property to water their plants. And we've seen WePay block fundraising for the California Growers Alliance after they had raised $10,000. So this was a payments platform that just was purchased by JP Morgan Chase. And they're afraid of running afoul of the federal government. So they blocked basically, you know, relief efforts for these farmers. But yeah, smoke damage is hurting the crops that didn't burn themselves. This is a delicate, fragrant flower bud. And at this time of year, it'll just soak up ash, soot, smoke, and what have you. And when it gets in there, it's impossible to get out. People hope they can do extractions and kind of create a cannabis oil that is more clean. But experts are saying that, you know, human noses are very attuned to the smell of wildfire and fires in general. And the whole entire market is so glutted with cannabis that people only want A grade. So it's hard to see how this smoke damaged crop has a future in the market.
Well, when you're talking about the market, we have to take into account the fact that despite this terrible damage up north, California as a whole expects to have a record harvest this year.
That's right. You know, we don't want to completely, you know, ruin things for people. Growers in California went bigger than they ever would this year. A lot of them were saying we're going to have one last good year before regulations kick in and taxes and all the tracking. And that's on the black and the white market. So people have been harvesting all year long indoors. They've been doing what's called light deprivation harvests, which are outdoors using tarps. And they've been harvesting all year long. And then the pot economy in California is incredibly geographically diverse. So other communities like Humboldt, Trinity, Lake, and elsewhere, as well as in Salinas and down in Southern California, are going to pick up the slack. We're still going to see prices fall this harvest season, just not as far and is not as fast. And it's kind of ironic, but it's a silver lining that these fires might have burned off, you know, a chunk of the market that will allow those who are still around to go one more year, because prices aren't going to go down as far as they might have.
Well, it is a big bumper crop, but in the reality is that there's real hurting. As you say, there's so little in the way of relief, and you think about Mendocino and Sonoma and how badly they were hit. Let me go back, in fact, to Tani Logan, who is chair of the board of the Sonoma County Growers, and we'll talk about the record harvest here for a moment, but let me also talk with you, Tani, about the supply chain, because a lot of these seed seller properties have gone down in flames, storage warehouses, oil extracting facilities. I mean, you have to get the whole picture here.
Yeah, I mean, there's collateral damage, I think, in each community from the oil manufacturers. I haven't heard of any of the labs being impacted, but, you know, we have seen a few distribution warehouses be impacted. And, you know, this is twofold, going to impact our greater economic picture, because we have, you know, for example, here in Sonoma County, over $500,000 that was put into creating a regulated system for cannabis operators to come into compliance. The county is looking to recover those taxes, or recover those costs in the taxes, if these operators cannot participate because they've hit that wall with no access to resources. This creates a compounded issue. So we really do have to get ahead of this and make sure that, you know, they can rebuild and be supported in that process. And then as for the supply chain, you know, there's some incredible work that's being done, and this really does, you know, is a great image of what the cannabis industry has been for decades, is the community helping itself, helping each other. We've seen, you know, across the supply chain, outpouring of support and help. And so that does tap into the resources and the funds that all of the supply chain has in order to help the operators who've been impacted.
And if you've just joined us, we're talking about the impact of the wildfires on California's marijuana industry. We do want to hear from you, and let me tell you how you can join the conversation with any questions or comments you might have. You can join us, of course, by calling us. Our telephone number, which is toll-free, is 866-733-6786. Welcome your calls now. Any questions or comments or what you'd like to add to the conversation, please feel free to join us. Again, the toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website and post questions or comments there. The website is kqed.org/forum, and simply click on the segment, and you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Tawny Logan with us, who is chair of the board of the Sonoma County Growers Alliance, and David Downs here in studio, cannabis editor for San Francisco Chronicle, and he runs the Chronicle's website, greenstate.com. You had something you want to add here, David?
Only that, you know, I was hanging out with Senator Mike McGuire at the SF Chamber this week, and he was mentioning that cannabis is as big as dairy, it's as big as wine, it's middle-class, small mom-and-pop grows, and cannabis is a main economic driver in a lot of these rural watersheds that don't do logging or mining anymore, and so it's a really gnarly hit to them.
Can I also ask you about the cost now? I mean, a lot of the cannabis growers up there are leasing buildings, and we've got thousands and thousands of dollars now that are being poured into that. I mean, life savings again and so forth, yeah?
Very much so. People, the way it works is you got to get a building and lease it for months and months and months while you seek a local license. And so companies across the state here in San Francisco all the way through Santa Rosa had pled tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars into buildings that sometimes now have been reduced to ash. And they're looking at what to do next and where to go next. And, you know, there's no vacancies up in Santa Rosa, and there certainly isn't going to be any more. You know, the vacancy rate isn't going to go up coming out of this. So people are hurting.
Let me ask you before we go to callers and emails and so forth, and again, you can join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. There were complaints up in Mendocino. Don't know if this is something that you can address, David, about having the law not exactly being as courteous as they were to people in the wine industry in terms of taking them to water their plants. In the case of the cannabis growers, escorting them, which was done to a great extent for those in the wine business, it changed a day later, I believe. But for that first day, there was kind of law enforcement not cooperating in that way.
Yeah, and that's very much a pattern of prohibition. And there's a lot of instincts and habits that law enforcement and officials have with regard to cannabis in the state. It's only been legal for a year, and we've had medical for 21 years, but it's been unregulated. So we've heard of the Department of Fish and Wildlife cutting down plants on properties that were in the process of getting licensing, and they're not going to stop doing that until they're forced to at the state and level. And then you're hearing about sheriff's departments that are not allowing people back to their properties the way they would allow similar crops because of the cannabis factor. You know, Mike McGuire said, you know, when a wine business messes up on its permitting, we don't go in there and rip out the vineyards. When a tomato business is missing a part of its license, we don't upend their farms, but we still feel comfortable doing that to cannabis people.
Well, here's Robert joining us from up in Cashmere, Washington. Robert, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. You know, I have to admit, I'm a fairly new user, and I've followed recent regulation, and obviously I'm in Washington State, where we've kind of mirrored what's going on in California as far as legalization. And I'm listening to the commentary about how casually, I guess, it's being commented that the black market still exists. And but yet we also are engaging in the conversation about how there's no disaster relief for the unregulated industry. And I just think that's an interesting dichotomy that, you know, we're not doing enough to support the regulated industry, and we're complaining about financial relief relative to disasters.
I think it's an interesting point you're making, and it's one that certainly occurred to me. Let me ask you, Tawny Logan, a comment on that. I mean, technically, on the federal level, it's still illegal, and there's a lot of black market, and yet the call for relief is going out. It's a clarion call.
So, you know, this is interesting. This conversation has been very active this year, especially. And in a lot of our research, what we're seeing, if you look at the 100% of the cannabis industry that is existing right now in California. About 10% have the resources, are in qualified zones, and have the financial ability to be able to participate at the fast pace that we are currently in the regulated market. There is about a 60% of the existing market that, you know, are kind of at a fence sitting or are interested in participating, but they might not have access to the finances. They might be in a zoning that they can't get permitted, so then they can't get the state license. And then we're looking at, you know, another 30% of the market that truly is kind of committed to a black market, staying in completely unregulated, you know, will not be looking for a permit or license. So, you know, where are the incentives in order to support that that 60% of the market to be able to come into a fully regulated market? That's something that the California Growers Association and many statewide organizations are looking to try and create. And I do feel like we have this rush of bringing this market in as fast as possible to be able to keep up with the pace. The metabolism in cannabis industry is very fast, and almost too fast for government and farmers to keep up with. So we do need to continue the conversation. All of the different departments that I've spoken with, there is a compassion and a desire to help, but then we have to go through the process. And the conversation always comes back to, will this have an impact or conflict with federal scrutiny?
Well, you want to comment here, David Downs?
Sure. I mean, it's really easy to cite the text of federal law and be like, this is illegal. Why should we care about these black market operators when there's all these lawful operators that are being undercut by them? But the reality is these people are all Americans. They're all Californians. There's a majority of support for legalization in America. I believe 61% is a recent Gallup poll. 90% of Americans support access to medical cannabis. And it certainly is legal here in California. And a lot of these people were in the process of getting legal and getting lawful, and they have the approval of their peers. So, you know, the reality is that it does affect, you know, people that we should care about. And, you know, I've certainly seen comments like, who cares? It's pot. But, you know, in my experience, it's very much an integrated fabric, part of the fabric of California that we're talking about. And we can't just throw those people under the bus.
And I'm going to read a comment from Louise who says, perhaps burning the pot is a blessing. It means less available on the market. Many county and state health agencies and other groups are spending lots of time and taxpayer money caring for people and trying to educate people about the negative effects of marijuana. We'll let that stand. And I'm also going to read a comment from Kyle who says, what will happen in January given Colorado sold out of recreational marijuana crops within the first few months of legal purchasing? Also, interesting point to take. Yeah, go ahead, Tawny.
I look forward to the day when we can truly, you know, identify this agricultural product and the medicinal value that it has, and be able to allow open market across the states. You know, in any other agricultural activity, it would make sense that a breadbasket state would be able to export the goods that are, you know, have low environmental impact across the nation. And, you know, so long as we have a federal scrutiny and a misclassification of Schedule One, we are restricted to California.
And I'm going to go to a caller outside of California. Ken is joining us from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Ken, you're on the air. Good morning.
How are you guys doing?
Okay, thank you.
Good. All right. So a couple questions about the smoke getting on the plants and whether that there would be any sort of toxic concerns about what it is that you're smoking, and how they would, you know, make sure that what you're smoking didn't contain any you know, dangerous, you know, chemicals that were within the smoke. My other question is that there was I was with the bus through, they were talking about that there was a rumor that the fires may have been started by Mexican drug cartel, but that's just nonsense, or if there's any validity to that. And then my final question is, would they fill the void, would they consider filling the void by marijuana coming from any other countries like Mexico, or would that not happen either?
Okay, well, there's a trio of questions here, and let me defer here to David Downs. So first of all, you sort of made a cynical raising of the eyebrows when you brought up the Mexican drug cartel, but you do hear these kinds of conspiracy theories.
Right? That's right. I'm seeing conspiracy theories run rampant online and through these communities, and we're in an era where the American public is being deliberately misinformed and disinformed by other state actors that seek to, you know, amp up the animosity between Americans. I certainly defer to Occam's razor here, and the simplest answer is often the correct one. And we had really high winds and a ton of dry vegetation, and it looks to be, you know, we have wildfires every year in California, and certainly the California cannabis industry has dealt with wildfires for decades. So I don't see any evidence of some type of conspiracy like that. If anything, a lot of evidence is pointing to, of course, PG&E and down power lines and that kind of thing.
What about testing the toxins? He raised that whole question.
Sure, yeah. We know wildfire smoke contains a number of, you know, nasty stuff, and it gets on cannabis and it stays in there. And we're already hearing concerns among the cannabis community about testing wildfire-tainted pot to make sure that those kind of toxins are not entering the medical supply chain and later the recreational supply chain. There isn't a lot of research around, you know, what gets in from wildfires into pot and how much more toxic it is than just lighting it on fire and smoking it in general. So, for example, people noted that if you put a pesticide on cannabis, it can, you know, when you burn it, it can turn to hydrogen cyanide. But the reality is, like, the fourth ingredient in cannabis smoke is hydrogen cyanide. Smoking, we all know, is not exactly a healthy activity. Is burning cannabis that's been tainted with wildfire that much more toxic than burning cannabis in general? The science certainly isn't in.
You want to take the third question? He's talking about other countries.
Yeah, we're in this really interesting time in the world where we are seeing global export markets emerge for medical marijuana, and that's completely lawful under the single convention of drugs, narcotics in the world. And so a number of countries are poised to become big exporters of cannabis. But as far as I know, California or America isn't in the business of importing cannabis. We currently import hemp from Canada and China, but I don't know of any case where we're importing medical cannabis, and I don't see them creating a regulatory structure for that in the near future.
Another caller, and it's Wayne from Decatur, Alabama. Wayne, welcome. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. With the popularity and the polls shifting to a more positive cannabis kind of situation, is there any ability, and as a side note, I'm from Riverside County originally, is there any ability for us out in the, I guess, out in the nether regions of America, like in Alabama, to actually help out the growers with respect to a GoFundMe situation, or can we, you know, help them out monetarily?
Yeah, it's good of you to offer. In fact, I'm looking at a comment from Gary who says, where can we send donations to these growers? People do want to rally and help. Tawny Logan, can you help us tell how they can help?
Sure. We have a new fundraising site up through PayPal that can be found on calgrowersassociation.org. It's calgrowersassociation.org/wildfire. And you can also go to scgalliance.com. And we have a link up on our website that goes right back to that central fundraising site. And it's also worth saying we have a email, wildfire@cagrowers.org. If you or someone you know in the cannabis community has been impacted by the wildfires, we ask that you report and help us find the victims from the fires so that we can allocate these funds and the resources that are being donated. There's been an incredible amount of outpouring of air filters, food, you know, chicken coops, other things for the community. And all of those can be also offered to that email address.
Well, there are those also who criticize marijuana growers. And let me just go to a comment here and get your response, Tawny Logan, from a comment that one of our listeners, Pam, writes. And she says, my son-in-law manages a water district in Sonoma County. He tells me that during the fires, Cal Fire worked to save a property and discovered the grower had made an illegal water connection, stealing water for the growing. This impacts the ability to fight fires. The growers that make illegal utility connections should pay the highest fines and possibly face jail time. Can you shed any light on that, Tawny?
I mean, I think that's true for any citizen in Sonoma County or in California, in the United States. You know, we have to be mindful of the resources that we all share and use. And I do think that some of the bad actors in our industry, it's a byproduct of an unregulated industry for decades. And the adoption of regulations and permitting and licensing is the way that we create a pathway for any business to participate in best management practices.
And David Downs?
Yeah, I know. I'm sure there's a lot of cases of bad actors from the illegal market tapping into water supplies, but I'm also tracking the opposite. I know of a farm in Napa County where the firefighters showed up and the farmers showed them where their water tanks were for the cannabis, as well as where the holding pond was full of water. And then, you know, a lot of cannabis people have a lot of resources like trucks that they deployed alongside firefighters. These are not people who scare easily. They are very risk tolerant. And when they were ordered to evacuate, they often stood their ground to defend their neighborhoods and their friends' neighborhoods. And the amount of heroism that I'm seeing come out of this community has just been jaw-dropping.
I like that phrase use, risk tolerant.
Yeah.
I've heard that in a long time. Liz asked a question. Does this mean our cost as consumers is going to go up? And you had said before, David, probably because of this bumper crop this year, just the opposite.
Yeah, it's really hard to say because everyone's got one hand on the elephant and it's not a tracked market the way it is in Washington or other states. But we're in the middle of a decades-long macroeconomic decline in the price of pot. It peaked at like $5,000 a pound wholesale for high grade back in the 90s, and it's been sliding ever since. Everyone expects that slide to continue. People are just wondering how much it will fall and how fast. Everyone was expecting a big reckoning this year. Certainly in Colorado, wholesale pounds have been cut in half in the last 2 years. And so, you know, people are expecting to see $600 pounds of outdoor by Thanksgiving, which could mean $37 ounces wholesale, which means up to $150 ounces for retailers. And that's about half off premium prices.
I want to get a final caller in here. Jane, thank you for joining us. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for the program. I'd like to inject a note of reality. I'm a founding member of CGA. That's California Growers Association. We're based up in northern Mendocino County in the inland area. The reality here is that the median income in Mendocino County is $45,000. And for thousands of very tiny farmers, they don't have mega grows of pot. They have small family biodynamic farms. They have orchards, beneficial plantings. They're farming very, very responsibly. And for many of us who are second and third and fourth generation even, we see ourselves as stewards of the land. And we would just like a note of reality injected that the vintners measure their water in acre feet. We are very, very water wise and eager to work with agencies. And
we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. Jane, I very much appreciate your call, and that's going to have to put a close to this hour. Much appreciate David Downs and Tawny Logan being with us for this segment as well. Again, Tawny Logan chairs the board of the Sonoma County Growers Alliance. David Downs is cannabis editor for the San Francisco Chronicle and runs the Chronicle website, greenstate.com. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum. We're going to talk about bridging the divide in these politically polarized times. Can it be done? Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.